Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Each Friday, as I'm preparing the articles and things I want to talk about for the episode, I know that I've hit my limit on the extent of how many articles and the time I should take because my computer throttles and I end up having to sit and wait because I can't contain the number of tabs that I have open at once. I know that's a sign that I probably just need a new laptop, but it's also just a weekly sort of stark reminder that there is so much happening all at once in regards to this descent into fascism. So much so that just to get an idea of what's happened in the last 7 days, my computer crashes trying to handle the number of articles that I have open. I had to stop adding more articles. There were more things I wanted to point out, more things to talk about, but we're going to limit it to these 20 or so tabs that I have open here. We're going to talk about this a couple times throughout the episode, but I just want to mention how every once in a while I'm sort of shocked back awake. I receive a shock to the system when I realize how quickly things are progressing, how much things are changing, and how dire the situation is from a political perspective. This administration in the U.S., their attempt to flood the zone, inundate us with just a barrage of non-stop changes is working. The desensitization is real. I see an article and I don't have the energy or the effort to take the time to look into it the way that I would have a year ago. Just one of these articles, one of these things happening 2 years ago would have been enough to destroy an entire presidency. And now they're happening daily. And we look at them and we scoff and we say, oh yeah, of course. And we wonder if it will ever get adjudicated. We wonder if it will pass and we don't know. And 6 months later or a year later, we find out, but by then it's kind of lost momentum because there's been 100,000 other things that have happened in the meantime. I see things today, and we'll talk about some of these things today that are proposed. And I know that there's a chance that they won't pass. But I also know there's a chance that they will pass, and I might not hear about it if they do. And when you multiply that by the hundreds of different ways that this is happening, and even if you consider that only 5% or 10% or 20% of them get passed, get put into effect, those things are devastating blows to freedom and to democracy. I'll also mention that as I was preparing this episode, I recognized that I hadn't thought for a little while about how long are we or how far are we into Trump's presidency, how much of that presidency remains. And I realized that in my head, for some reason, I had thought we were 2 years, right? It's 2026. The last elections were 2024. No, the elections themselves were in November of 2024 with the inauguration in January of 2025. We are still just barely over a year into this thing, a year and 2 months. In so many ways, time is flying by in my life. In this way, it is crawling. Barely a quarter of the way through this presidency, we have experienced as much as we have, and we have 3 more years to go with who knows what level of damage to be further inflicted. Well, with that, let's jump into some of this. First is an update. A judge orders the deportation of 5-year-old Minneapolis boy Liam Ramos and his family. We've talked about this multiple times. I'm bringing this up just as, again, an update. This is a sort of vindictive vendetta. It's retribution against this child because he made Trump look bad. The judge has ordered an end to the asylum for this boy and his parents or his father and is ordering his deportation. Again, so much for Trump claiming that they're going after only the worst of the worst. Along with that, you might remember Kilmar Garcia. They are once again attempting to deport him, this time to Liberia. Once again, they are picking these very specific cases to make a point, and it just feels so much more like it's about cruelty than it is about actually trying to make the country a better place. According to The Independent, Stephen Miller is pushing states to stop educating undocumented children. The subheading says, White House immigration hardliner challenged lawmakers to pass the bill blocking funding and asked, quote, do we have a rhino problem in Texas? If you're unfamiliar with that terminology in U.S. politics, it is an acronym for Republican in name only, and it is essentially used for non-MAGA Republicans or non-MAGA members of the GOP who don't do everything that Trump wants. But going backwards, not even talking about the call out of Republicans who don't toe the MAGA line, just the fact that they're pushing states to stop educating undocumented children. It is such a horrifyingly nationalistic, oppressive, cruel thing to do, and it highlights their whole approach to immigration, to discrimination against undocumented folks, but also, of course, that's branching out to anyone who supports undocumented people, anyone who is brown, etc., etc. You might have heard about issues at the airports with TSA not being paid due to the current partial government shutdown. Essentially, the Department of Homeland Security is not being funded, and this is due in part because, I don't even know if I should say in part, almost entirely because MAGA refuses to pass any legislation or to fund the government until the SAVE Act is passed. And we'll refer back to this in just a moment in our section about elections. But essentially, Trump is holding airports and the TSA hostage. TSA agents have not been paid now for well over a month. I think they're approaching 6 to 8 weeks, but are still required to work. This is causing havoc at airports, and in a further, I guess, threat in order to do more damage and become more intimidating, Trump and Tom Homan have ordered ICE agents to go to multiple large airports throughout the U.S. And while they are not assisting TSA really in any way, they are pulling people out of lines. They are arresting people for deportation. It is an intimidation tactic. It is an escalation so that, you know, Trump can again attempt to get Democrats to cave to their demands for funding the Department of Homeland Security and ICE. All right, we'll come back to the SAVE Act more in just a moment. Moving for just a moment to the Iran war. Not going to talk a lot about this. I think I'm going to do an episode next week on this again. But it's been a confusing week. Trump continues to claim that they're close to a ceasefire, that talks are happening, which of course is causing havoc in the markets. There's a very interesting article on that one in just a second. But Iran, meanwhile, is saying, no, we are no closer to any ceasefire. We have not had any talks. We are not willing to have talks right now. Trump continues to threaten and then revoke those threats and then threaten again to bomb nuclear plants, power plants, civilian infrastructure, and some of that has now taken place. Then he'll say, okay, but now we're stopping that because we're close to an agreement. It is simply all over the place. Israel seems to be extra eager right now to attack infrastructure, to go harder. Sounds like Trump might be trying to reel them in slightly, as he's seeing the way that it's affecting stocks, as it's affecting oil, as it's affecting the economy, and of course, his popularity. Now, according to The Hill, Chris Murphy has accused the Trump administration of insider trading. It's not just Chris Murphy, that's what this specific article is talking about, but it seems quite clear that there is some serious corruption going on in regards to the timing of some of these announcements and what Trump is saying, and bets or trades being made on the market beforehand. This is something we talked about before with Kalshi, so people can make bets, and then suddenly, you know, a massive bet is put in, and then an announcement is made just a few moments later, leading to multi-million dollar payouts for certain people. Or we see a market crash, somebody will buy massively, and then, you know, an announcement is made that shoots markets back up again. And it seems clear that Donald Trump, in continuing to flip-flop back and forth, is playing these markets and making somebody a whole lot of money. The article says, the title says, Murphy on $1.5 billion stock trade before Trump-Iran announcement, quote, mind-blowing corruption. Senator Chris Murphy on Monday drew attention to an unusually large oil stock trade that occurred moments before President Trump announced a five-day pause on previously threatened energy infrastructure strikes in Iran, indicating it appeared to be a case of insider trading. In an X post highlighted by Murphy, a stock market watcher said, quote, "In one move, $1.5 billion in S&P 500 futures was bought, while $192 million in oil futures was sold. Bigger than any future purchases made at the time, $1.5 billion 5 minutes before Donald Trump's post." One of those purchases that was made was $500 million all on its own. This just seems like par for the course, and we are all being taken advantage of. The economy, the price at the pump, retail investors who are in stocks, all of these things are paying the price for this insider trading for someone else to get rich, while as the crypto bros say, we're all left holding the bag. You may have seen this week that Robert Mueller died. He was a former FBI director, and he was special counsel to the investigations into Donald Trump. Right after he died, Donald Trump sent out a tweet, I guess, through Truth Social, saying, quote, "Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people." A global report, according to NPR, found that Trump is dismantling democracy at, quote, "an unprecedented speed." Reading from the article, it says, "Three major reports out this month say President Trump has done serious damage to American democracy at remarkable speed since his return to the White House. An annual report from VDEM, an institute at Sweden's University of Gothenburg, concluded democracy had deteriorated so much in the U.S. that it lowered the country's democracy ranking from 20th to 51st out of 179 countries. The U.S. landed between Slovakia and Greece. Meanwhile, Brightline Watch, which surveys more than 500 U.S. scholars, concluded that the U.S. system now falls nearly midway between liberal democracy and dictatorship. The newest survey comes out next week. Brightline Watch's co-directors spoke to NPR exclusively ahead of publication. And yet another report out Thursday from Freedom House, a Washington, D.C.-based democracy think tank, said that among free countries, the U.S. joined Bulgaria and Italy in registering the largest declines in political rights and civil liberties last year. The developments in the United States are moving toward dictatorship, what the founders wanted to avoid, said Stefan Lindberg, the VDEM Institute's founding director, who spent 7 years in the U.S. "It's the most rapid decline ever in the history of the United States and one of the most rapid in the world." More than 4,000 scholars contributed data to the report, which is the largest of its kind. We are 1 year in, folks, with 3 long years left, and his efforts likely only to accelerate as he becomes further and further emboldened and further backed into a corner as he approaches the end of his term. I can see these numbers continuing to fall through the floor as we go from 20th to 50th, from 50th to 80th to 120th to being in the bottom 10% of democracies in the world. Obviously, there's no way to know exactly what's going to happen, what's going to occur in the midterms, how that could increase or slow down the momentum at which this all changes. So we will have to wait and see. And we are now just a number of months, 7 months away at this point from those midterm elections. On that topic, an article in The Hill highlights what I had spoken about earlier in the episode in regards to Trump refusing to end the shutdown until Democrats support the Save America Act. We've talked about the Save America Act for the last several weeks. This is Republican attempts at essentially rigging the elections, deciding who can vote, when, and how. So from the article, it says, President Trump late Sunday said no deal to end the partial government shutdown until Democrats join with Republicans to pass the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, also known as the SAVE Act. Radical left Democrats unless and until they vote with Republicans to pass the Save America Act, Trump wrote in a Truth Social post. It says, it is far more important than anything else we are doing in the Senate, and that includes giving these same terrible people, the Dems, who are to blame for this mess, a $5 billion cut in ICE funding, a deal which, even when disguised as something else, is unacceptable to me and the American, unless it includes their voter approval of voter ID with picture, citizenship to vote, no mail-in voting, all paper ballots, no men and women's sports, and no transgender mutilization of our precious children. Senate Majority Leader John Thune has repeatedly said there aren't enough votes to get the bill over the line anytime soon. Trump also wrote that Thune should clearly identify the few Republicans that aren't supporting the measure while accusing them of voting against America. Quote, they will never be elected again. In other words, lump everything together as one and vote. Kill the filibuster and stay in D.C. for Easter if necessary. So he's got little chance of this passing. There are some Republicans who are not going along with it. Again, those that he would call rhinos. He's threatening, saying we need to get those out of office. Do not vote for them ever again. He's trying to break the filibuster, which would make it so that they don't have to have a supermajority in the Senate for this thing to pass. It's just not looking likely. And yet he is willing to take down everyone and everything with him, including the TSA, our airports, et cetera, et cetera, by extending this government shutdown in order to get what he wants, because he knows that this is existential for his future, for the last three, I guess, 2 years, depending on when it all goes down, of his administration. And, you know, if he's going to attempt to have a third term and what that looks like, it all starts with these elections. Now, going back to part of the SAVE Act, which is the mail-in voting piece, the U.S. Supreme Court, according to Reuters.com, conservative members of the Supreme Court lean toward Republican bid to limit mail-in voting. There was a case brought to the court out of Mississippi, which involves the deadline for when ballots need to be in. In the past, they had allowed for as long as there was, a 5-day grace period, essentially, for those mail-in ballots, as long as they were postmarked before the election. That meant you could essentially still send those in the day of or the day before the election. And though, you know, the mail might take a few days to get there, they would still be counted. Donald Trump blames part of his loss in 2020 to this very thing, saying that all of those late ballots that came in gave Democrats a huge edge, and then claimed that it must have all been fraud. So he's trying to do away with mail-in voting at all, and this is a potential small win if these Supreme Court justices cut down on the time, that grace period, that those votes can be counted. If, for example, they cut down on that grace period and then cut funding to the post office, created havoc, created rules or whatever that made it so that right around voting time, the post office was slowed down. Maybe there's some sort of national emergency or something that those votes don't get delivered in time. They could discredit a whole lot of those mail-in votes. And that's just a plug for if mail-in voting is still allowed and legal to you, if you were in the U.S. voting for the midterms, make sure to try and get those in as early as possible to deny any sort of shenanigans. And Trump, who calls mail-in voting cheating and who has done everything he can to get it eliminated, he himself cast a mail-in ballot out of Florida just this very week. This was for a special election there. According to NBC News, Trump cast a mail ballot again in Florida, even as he calls the method cheating. The president cast a mail ballot in an upcoming Florida special election, according to county records. Rules for thee, but not for me. All right. I am going to touch on this lightly today, but I'm going to do a full episode on this next week to go into it deeper. This is one of those areas in which I mentioned legislation continues to come up. It may not have a ton of support, or it may look close, right? And it's happening in different states at different times and to different degrees, and the legislation all looks different. But it all has one aim, and that is to attack the rights of women. My wife and I watched The Handmaid's Tale last year. It is not the type of show that my wife typically watches or enjoys. She doesn't like dark. She doesn't like the sort of dreary, negative aspect. But she was enthralled by this. And I believe that it is what sparked in her a desire to get more involved in politics, even if that just means understanding more what is happening. A bill in Ohio is calling for state-monitored pregnancy registry. There was an interview done by MS Now, which was MSNBC, a segment in which they talked about The Handmaid's Tale. They had interviewed and spoken with the author of that book, Margaret Atwood, who insists that her novel was rooted in real history. Now, a new Ohio bill proposed by Republicans to track all pregnancies in the state is drawing disturbing parallels to her work of fiction. Georgetown law professor Michelle Goodwin, and she was in on this interview that I will share in the post, warns that if the legislation passes, there is a, quote, very real potential and probability of criminal punishments and civil fines and various other horrors. Doctors in many states are threatened with years in prison, massive fines for assisting in abortion care. This is already rapidly approaching that sort of place. But a bill which calls for an actual registry to be able to track and gather data from a state level, from a government level, on who is pregnant and what is happening with their pregnancy. It's extremely dangerous, especially because, as has been mentioned, miscarriages are actually called an abortion medically. And so you get into some really legal gray areas that can be used to discriminate against certain people and criminalize certain people for things that happen naturally as well. An article in The Guardian talks about how a Georgia woman was charged with murder after police say she took pills to induce an abortion. If prosecuted, case against 31-year-old would be one of the first in Georgia since it passed 2019 law banning most abortions. This is a woman named Alexia Moore. The arrest warrant charging Moore with murder uses language that echoes the law, saying police determined that Moore had been pregnant beyond 6 weeks based on the medical staff's knowledge that the baby had a beating heart and was struggling to breathe. Dana Sussman, senior vice president of the advocacy group Pregnancy Justice, said, quote, "No one should be criminalized for having an abortion," and calling Moore's case an unprecedented murder charge for an alleged abortion. Getting into a little bit of the details of this one, I don't want to go too far, but it says court records say Moore arrived at a hospital on 30th December complaining of abdominal pain. She told medical workers that she had taken misoprostol, a drug used in medication abortions, and the opioid painkiller oxycodone, according to the arrest warrant. Georgia bans abortion after embryonic cardiac activity can be detected. That's generally at 6 weeks gestation before many women even know they're pregnant. Anyway, this is just an example of one of the first cases in this state specifically to prosecute for this type of thing, and a murder charge at that. I was not able to find in the article how far along she was in her pregnancy. I will note at the end of the article, it talks about how the drugs misoprostol and mifepristone, sorry, I'm saying those wrong, together are approved for terminating pregnancies during the first 10 weeks of gestation by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. It's also used off-label for abortion in the second trimester. I think it's important to note that when it comes to women's health, autonomy, and choices for their own bodies, if this woman had been able to seek out an abortion legally, as is done all over the country by so many people, this would not have needed to have been something that she sought out on her own. It could have been done in a much safer manner, a healthier and quicker manner. It would not be in the national eye, and this woman should not be charged for murder. Okay, as you know, I like to end these. I've got a few articles here that talk about maybe some good news or some areas in which we might be headed in the right direction, or at least areas in which some sort of justice is being sought. Currently, there are 5 articles of impeachment for Attorney General Bondi, defying a subpoena for the full and unredacted Epstein files, violating the Epstein Files Transparency Act, weaponizing the Department of Justice for President Trump, consistently defying court orders, and perjuring herself to Congress. Obviously, for this to go anywhere, it's got to have widespread support. Trump administration may be able to shut this down. We'll have to see where it goes. And again, hope that one day this administration is gone and people can be brought to justice. According to ARS Technica, all of Doge's work could be undone as lawsuit against Musk proceeds. Elon Musk must defend himself against a lawsuit alleging that he unlawfully seized too much power as the leader of the Department of Government Efficiency, a judge ruled on Monday. In her opinion, partly denying a motion to dismiss, U.S. District Judge Tanya S. Chutkan did not buy the government's defense that Musk held no office formally established by law, and therefore did not need Senate confirmation and cannot be alleged to have exceeded his authority under the Constitution's Appointment Clause. Quote, defendants appear to make the extraordinary argument that an individual who holds an important office and wields immense power is not subject to the Appointments Clause so long as the office was unlawfully created and the power was unlawfully seized. She called the defense disquieting. Anyway, it's good to see that a judge is taking this seriously, that we may see Musk face some sort of justice and his actions undone, though, of course, so much of the damage is already done, is permanent, and will be difficult to reverse. Going along with that, from Fortune.com, 3 Tennessee teenagers are suing Elon Musk's XAI for creating sexually explicit images of them. They're claiming the company's image generation tools were used to morph real photos of them into explicitly sexual images. This mirrors some other lawsuits that are happening amongst people affected by social media, and they're starting to win. A woman was just awarded $6 million alleging Meta and Google due to her addiction to Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, ruined her life, caused her severe distress. And while I know in the U.S., we're a litigation-heavy place, and people take advantage of that to sue for vast amounts of money, in this case, I would love to see, and especially now that there's precedent, more cases like this that may either A, bring down these social media networks altogether, or B, create change around real legislation, around regulation that requires certain things in algorithms to not make them as addicting as possible, to not take advantage of people's private information, et cetera, et cetera. It's yet to be seen if this will continue and if it picks up any momentum, but the lawsuits and winning these lawsuits is of great importance. According to The Independent, Washington State bans all law enforcement, including ICE agents, from wearing masks while on duty. We've seen this trend. California attempted this. Now Washington, basically saying police, ICE, any law enforcement officer cannot wear a mask while doing their duty. We'll see if it's obeyed. It's a big step forward. And lastly, the FBI agents who worked on the Trump 2020 election probe sue for wrongful termination. It was a few weeks ago we had talked about how Kash Patel had multiple of these FBI agents simply because they were involved in the 2020 presidential election investigation or probe, and they are now suing the government for that. Again, we'll see where it goes. These things take time. But just as Trump can flood the zone and cause a plethora of issues that raise court cases and all those types of things, so can people return that. And the more that the administration is caught up in their own lawsuits, the more that Pam Bondi is testifying and trying to defend herself, or that Kash Patel is doing the same, or Noam, or whoever it ends up being. I know Noam's gone now, but her replacement just got put in, which is gross. But anyway, the point is, the more that these people are tied up in legal issues, even if they don't necessarily lose them, so even if the lawsuits brought against them aren't successful, hopefully it is tying up their time, their ability to continue doing the harmful things that they're doing, and can hopefully decrease that acceleration. Don't know. I know that that's probably wishful thinking. The fact of the matter is, the Trump administration has garnered too much power. They're doing too much all at once, and they're doing it very quickly. We are 14 months into this thing, 15 months, and we've got more than 30 left to go. I think the next few months are absolutely crucial to the future of America and to the world. The threat to democracy is week in, week out, more and more dire. We get closer and closer to the precipice of going so far we can't come back. Just this morning, I was talking to my group of friends, and we were discussing the pendulum and the fact that even at the end of the Trump administration, it certainly does not spell relief. It doesn't mean we're out. Democracy will have taken some serious hits. The power of the president will have grown substantially, and whoever the next president is may swing that pendulum the other way while maintaining that same amount of power. And so on and so it goes. With a continued decrease of democracy, of freedom for the people of this country, and an increased and outsized effect on its citizens and on the citizens of every country in the world as our dying empire lashes out through its last phase of life. It doesn't have to happen that way. If some semblance of democracy remains and the American people can rally, can wake up to what is theirs to do and to demand justice and freedom and rights, there may yet still be a chance to maintain those. We'll see how the American people respond. All right. Thank you for joining me this Friday. Thanks for sticking around and listening to this podcast. I hope you're getting value out of it. The topic is not cheery, but it's vitally important, and I hope it's helping you to stay informed. I'm always happy to take your feedback. Please feel free to connect with me and reach out. Let me know your thoughts, what you'd like to see more of or less of. As always, breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com or on Reddit at user Corey John, KoryJon. See you next week. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.